Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Woman's Splain. Today, we have a very special guest. We are interviewing Redeema Kapoor. She is CEO and founder of Veggie Vice, a new CPG snack healthy chip, specifically with basically freeze-dried vegetables. And we're really excited to have her here.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much. Would love to just have a little intro about you. Please tell us, give a little overview of kind of your career journey and your current company. We can go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thanks so much. I'm so excited to share Veggie Vice with you. We just kind of launched this week in a soft launch. Yeah, so very exciting timing. Thank you. And going to be launching in a much bigger way this April. But to give you some background about me, I started my career in finance in investment banking at Citigroup. Did that for about 2.5 years. We can dive into those details. But then I actually quit to join a very early stage skincare startup called Avrani as their chief of staff, kind of helping the two founders with everything. You know, at that stage, you really need to just, you know, run around with your head cut off. And then, hit a point where I wasn't, I loved the experience, but I wasn't really learning or growing and didn't really know what was next for my career. So I went to business school to take a step back, you know, really figure out what I wanted the next, 20, 30 years of my career to look like. Knew I always had like an entrepreneurial passion. So started experimenting while in business school, and here we are, Veggie Vice is alive.
Yeah, well, we're so excited to have you.
Thanks.
I think you have a really incredible journey. For season three, we are highlighting founders that have this traditional corporate background, specifically in finance and consulting. So you have that, traditional background, and then you kind of made your way over to the beauty space and ultimately the food space. Let's talk a little bit about, you as an investment banker. How you think those skills kind of translated you into moving into the beauty and food industry and then ultimately founding your own company?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people bash on finance and investment banking careers. And I'm honestly really grateful for my time there. I think if I look back, obviously with everything I know now, maybe I didn't need to stay as long as I did, but I don't regret it at all. I think there's so many skills that you gain just being corporately trained, if that makes sense, right? Getting back to emails on time, how to coordinate across teams, just general professional etiquette, and careers like investment banking, consulting, they really prime you for that. Now the work, I started to find not as interesting. So I think that's where I started to detach a bit. Mm. But the process and just that general mentality of getting shit done, I credit to my banking years for sure. And also the grind, right? I think everyone is in prime to grind because you have worked those long hours. You have spent a lot of time, in the office and just revising certain things, which can get monotonous. But at the same time, now those things still echo, right? When I'm it's 10 and I want to go to bed, but I'm so close, I'm just going to finish it. Not in a toxic way, but because you want to, right? Now you want to, before it was because you had to. I think a lot of those, softer skills and just professional etiquette skills really translate over. And then of course, having some finance background is very helpful, right? Everything is numbers driven as it should be. While CPG is very exciting and the branding and the food is really exciting, at the end of the day, the numbers need to make sense as well. Mm-hmm. So I really credit that all to kind of my financiers.
Was there a specific moment in your banking career where you were okay, I can't do this anymore, I'm going to try something else? Or were you always really interested in going into consumer and more entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I actually thought I was going to be in banking forever.
Career banker.
Crazy. I was like, I'm a lifer. I loved it. I really loved it because I just there was just smart people doing exciting things. You're working with cool companies. You're even as an analyst, I was talking to the CEOs. I just really loved the thrill of that. But then I started to find the work a little less interesting and started to kind of see the systems and the inefficiencies and those kinds of things. So I think that's where I sort of lost the interest. But I always did have an entrepreneurial itch. I always thought maybe down the line, I'll retire and start something, or, if I found the right idea, I would quit banking. But I really was excited about, that life. It was not until, honestly, I lost my mom during my analyst years where I kind of had to step back and be whoa, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? I see kind of what my MDs look like, what their lives look like, what even the middle people, my directors, VPs look like. Not the life I kind of wanted. And after having that experience personally, it puts life into perspective, we want to live forever, but that's just not how it goes. And the longer you wait, the scarier I think things get. So that was sort of I really just quit cold turkey in November of 2019, actually Halloween, I remember. It was October 31st, I quit. And then the next day, November 1st, I went to the new job because it was Black Friday in beauty, and that's a big deal. And I didn't want to miss that season. So I didn't even have a break. I was just like, I want to do this. Like, we're going to learn. And it was my first kind of like test run into entrepreneurship because, you know, you want to take risks, but like almost calculated risk. When it's like, okay, definitely taking a big pay cut, definitely making, you know, a big career change, but let me test it out, right? Let's see if like, if I want to do this for myself, let me understand what I can about this industry and how it works and if I'm even good at it, you know, like if it's even exciting to me, because at the end of the day, like if you're not excited about what you're doing, everything else is moot, right? Like this business, CPG businesses, entrepreneurship pursuits, they don't happen unless you are fully invested.
Yeah. And then tell us more about, I guess, being a chief of staff. What was that like?
Yeah. I mean, you're a chief of staff, right?
Yeah, no, I am.
So you probably relate to it like, a bit more.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it definitely is. I think it feels like a natural progression from banking and finance as well. At least I experienced this.
Yeah.
Where I felt like I had a lot of skills to bring and it was very valuable. But you also, what is nice and also difficult about a finance career is that when you're trained to do a very specific thing and it's very repeatable. So it's like you kind of like, it's very difficult, but then you get to a point where you can kind of become a master expert at it and right. just kind of like rinse and repeat. I feel like now at my job, there is not a day that I could possibly
so
ever be a
different.
Master at. Yeah. And it's like always a new thing, always a new challenge, even though it is great to kind of have like that base. I don't know if maybe this is probably something you experienced as a founder as well, but
yeah. It's just madness. I mean, chief of staff role is like literally madness. And like there's not two that look the same. So even before I made the jump, like I was like, what am I doing? Like banking analyst, associate, like your roles are so defined. And chief of staff, it's like if you're chief of staff in a political sense means something completely different. If you're chief of staff at a tech company, like completely different. So it really is just like this, you know, undefinable role that you just have to jump into. And for me, what I was looking for, which was like to really test run entrepreneurship, it was exactly what I needed, right? It was first day, we don't know how much cash we have, when we're going to run out of cash, build us a model. To the second day, we don't know how Facebook ads work. We need to do this, like, go, you know? So it was just drinking from the fire hose. And it really got to test my, like, figure it out skill set. Mm-hmm. Because you're never going to know everything, and nor should you. But it's like, okay, I don't know how this works. Let me learn what I can, test a little bit, try it, and then figure it out and iterate from there. And so that's what I kept, right? Every day, you just were like, okay, we're doing a rebrand. I was kind of leading our kind of rebrand efforts at the time. Packaging. I was a packaging banker, which was hilarious, but didn't translate directly into like picking the jars and picking the colors and all the tones. I didn't know what a Pantone was, right? So you start to learn those things, but that's what's exciting about it, right? Like you have this exciting finance sales set, but now you can also pair that with like a creative side of things or just like an operational efficiency of like, how does this all come together, right? There's a time to everything. There's a process to everything. We have four rounds of, you know, samples. I have to like literally sign each jar and approve it before it goes. Like those little things I just would have never known and done. And I think understanding that process drives everything I'm doing today, even on my own with Veggie Vice, right? Like knowing how the whole supply chain even comes together. It was so important to understand that. And people go into it blind, which is amazing too. I think I could have done that and, you know, had the same result. I don't know. I haven't done much yet, but like, you know, have an exciting result that way. But like what a blessing it is to kind of know some of those ins and outs before, you know, getting to do them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How do you think, I mean, I think this is something that was so difficult for me, especially since you were so young when you became a chief of staff. Like, I feel like I had a lot more experience before I transitioned, but how did you manage sort of like the autonomy and like having like feeling like you could make these decisions like in this really critical role? Because I think, you know, even though finance trains you so well, it also trains you to like feel like you can't even do anything on your own, right?
So
you know what
true.
I'm saying? Especially at the bottom, you're like, I can't even send an email without fucking 12 sign-offs.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I actually am sitting here freaking out of like, this and is right. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
totally.
How do you think you were able to really like gain that confidence at like 24 to go from being like, honestly, the bottom of the totem pole at Citi to like the number three at a company?
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a small company, so that took the pressure off a little bit, right? Like, we're not chief of staff, like a 200-person organization. But nonetheless, like the role and like the autonomy had to act as such.
Yeah.
And it was a process. Like I don't think I was good at it for a long time. I was very scared, right? Like
it's super scary.
Quitting my job A was like maybe one of the scariest things I ever did. Like leading up to that, I think I had the technical offer like 6 months before I quit. But I just wasn't ready. Like I was dragging my feet. I was crying every day because I was like, the world is ending, it felt like. It's such a scary move, right? You work your entire college career for like that job.
Yeah.
And then breaking away from it feels like you just are wiping away. And that's just not how life works, right? You guys know now on the other side. Like, it's a journey. You have to take the steps. You have to learn and try things. So that in itself, I was coming in with such like a fear mindset that then having to make those decisions about like things I had no idea how they work. I'm like, okay, I got to post a blog post. Like, is someone going to check it? No. Like, no one's checking anything. No one has time to. And nor should they, right? Like, the two founders, they have enough to do. I'm coming in to sort of relieve that like workload and you know, help them keep going. And having them step back and check everything, nobody has time for that. Like, so it really just had to, you had to find that inner confidence to be like, all right, here's the model. I don't know if the numbers are right, but like, what? I don't have an associate. Like, no one's checking it, right? So you just have to start finding that confidence. If it's wrong, like, I think in finance, everything felt so mission critical. Like, God forbid there's a period missing on the slide. Like, the deal's going to blow up. And you realize, like, that's just not how things work. Like, we're not saving lives. We are making people feel better with their skin and everything like that. But it's okay, right? Like, if some small thing is wrong, you fix it, you get better, you move on. And learning that was honestly really important, especially now when like the stakes are higher and it's my own business. It's like, okay, it's okay. Like, things are gonna break and it's okay. And you can just fix it, learn, and like try not to do it again. Whereas in banking, your world was ending if the graph was blue and not purple. Like, you know, your life is over.
Life is completely over.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think unlearning that was kind of what that experience helped me do and find a little bit of my inner confidence.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it took me a long time to unlearn. I think I still am every day. I think, I don't know if you experience this too, but also like being a chief of staff working for operators, like they have not grown up in this world that you do feel like basically like, if there is like a period wrong, like your entire life will fucking end.
Yeah.
So how do you think you're able to also manage that? Because I think I bring some values to the staff with that attitude as well. We're like, honestly, no, like we should make this better. Like, no, this is bad. Like we should make this better for our board, whatever. But then at the same time, balancing like that things need to be done. And how do you think as an entrepreneur, you've kind of been able to balance that as well?
Yeah. So actually at the skincare experience at Evrani, I was working for two ex-finance people, ex-private equity. So like we all came from that similar hustle mindset for better or for worse, right? Like I think we all kind of had that energy. So like things had to get done. And then when like the creatives joined the team, it was like a totally different vibe. We're like, what do we do with them, right? Like
they're in their own island.
Like, right? What do like, no idea.
Like we asked them to like crank things out and they're like, that's not how it works. That's like crazy. I need to feel inspired. And then it's like personnel, not like issues, but like you're learning, right? Yeah.
You're like, why isn't this done? And you're like, I haven't felt inspired today. You're like,
wait, what?
Make yourself inspired. Yeah.
And that was such a learning, right? Of like how, and it's, I just had never been around people like that. And like, I consider myself having like some creative sides and such, but like when I was in banking, like those were all suppressed. So I was I can't even dig deep and find a way to empathize. Yeah, it's like the colors are picked for you too. There. You can't even choose the color. Yeah. It has to be blue.
Yeah.
So I think that was a big, you know, learning of like dynamic on a team. And I respect that a lot more now, right? Now when you see a creative item, you're like, wow, I actually know how long this took and how it wasn't just like a task that you checked off and completed. Like it is an art form. As cheesy as that sounds, like it's what people's livelihood is for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's art and they're bringing it, you know, it's their whole self going into it. And until we had someone who was doing like our email marketing, and she's like, I'm not feeling it yet. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I got to send this email out.
Feel it now.
The sale is tomorrow. But then she like, you know, when she felt it, she did it. And it was better than it would have been. Right? Like, you don't want to force those things.
Yeah.
So I think like, you know, you have to find a middle ground. And again, it's a lot of unlearning. So like you get this like really strict training and you learn all these things, which is amazing. But then you got to unlearn them a bit and be like, there's a middle ground of like the intensity that some industries bring and kind of the softness that other ones bring. So I think that's how I sort of, you know, started to learn those things. And now as a founder, we're like, you have to mesh both of those things all day long. Creative pursuits, operations, finance, like everything is firing at all times. I have that sort of background to be like, okay, it's fine. Like right now I need to be creative and it's going to take me a bit longer than like cranking out like, you know, some Excel thing I need to do.
Yeah. I think that experience was such a good, I guess, bridge to becoming an efficient founder.
Absolutely.
I know you went to business school.
Yeah.
So how long were you at your beauty company for before you made that decision and what kind of drove you to apply?
Yeah. So it was about 2.5 years-ish I was at Evrani. I was thinking of business school. Like it was all something in the back of my mind, right? Like once you go into banking, it's like banking, PE, business school, like then start a company. Like that's always the path as well. So while I was like excited to maybe stay in finance, I always kind of had that in the back of my mind. So then leaving to join Evrani, both my founders went to business school. So I had their sort of insights as well. And I saw the just like I don't know, how it changed their perspective on work and life and like their network of things. And I really wanted that. And to couple that, COVID hit, right? So here I was, I had my finance colleagues, and I loved that, right? Having the analyst class that pushes you and kind of having that community is so important. Then I joined Startup World, where I was so excited to like meet founders, meet other chief of staffs. And then COVID hit, where like all of that was kind of stripped away. So I didn't really have, I feel like, a peer group that was pushing me to evolve in that role. And I really wanted to find like those like-minded people who, you know, are doing amazing things, who we can all do those together and share notes and such. So, and then at the company, I was managing at the end of it kind of all of our operations piece. So everything from, I was, you know, creating the products, which was exciting, the jars, the packaging, getting out the door, working with our 3PLs, to retail, to sales. So kind of that entire supply chain piece. And I was like, okay, am I packaging ops girl? Is this like what I want to do? And that's totally fine. Or do I still like have, you know, enjoy the other sides of things, the marketing end of things? How does that come together? The strategic front, like managing different stakeholders. And I kind of liked all of it. And even as I evolved within the company, I had a really hard time letting those things go, right? Like I helped build our website at the early days. So like bringing in someone to take that on, it was like my child was being ripped away from me. So like, you know, it was hard. So I was like, I really do enjoy doing all those things at once. And while it's not sustainable for a long-term scale, I still had that itch to kind of do that again for myself. So business school is really a time to like step back and figure out like, okay, I know I want to start something. I literally went in being like, I'm not working for anyone else. Barely looked at the, you know, they have the career sites and stuff, right. Like barely looked at those. I did a browse because I'm like, what's all the hype about? Like, what's everyone, you know, why is everyone going to the 10th Amazon session today?
Once you set foot on Wharton campus, it's like, oh, search fund, PE.
Absolutely. And I could like, like thankfully remove myself from the finance bucket. Although weirdly enough, like, you know, Blackstone would like invite people to events and I was like offended that I wasn't invited. And then I sat back and I was like, why would they invite me? I'm not invited anymore. But like, you have to like let go of those old identities, right? If you want to step into your new one, you can't be like, well, I got to go to Blackstone and I got to go. Like, you don't want them. They don't want you, right? Yeah, it totally has to work. Yeah. So I did, you know, I did browse on the career site and I was like, yeah, nope, I'm sticking in my lane. And I went very focused into like, I want to build something, but I didn't know what, right? If it was beauty, I had that, right? Avrani was literally my whole self, my passion. I like honestly joined that company because I wanted to start something like that similarly. Mm-hmm. Like I had that itch undergrad or just never did anything about it. And then I saw them launch and I was like, fuck, like they did it, you know? And then so I wanted to join them because I was so excited about it. So I was like, okay, I don't want to just force something because I know your whole self really goes into it. Like every founder you meet, you know, if they're a good founder, which a lot of them are, like it's their whole self. It's a full expression of like who they are as a person. And it takes a lot out of you. And after seeing that from, you know, working with really passionate founders, I knew I didn't want to do something that didn't really fit that profile for me. Because, you know, it's then people can tell, right? Like if you're not putting yourself in it, if you're just like, oh, great, I can just like change the bag on something that exists and like make fun packaging and branding and like put it out there. Like it's really not going to go that far because you're not putting your heart into it. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't trying to force it, but the first year was frustrating because I did not know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I would grab people I thought were smart in business school. Like you're around a bunch of smart people who are also trying to do entrepreneurial things. A lot of them don't end up following through with that, which is fine. But I would grab anyone, you know, smart and be like, let's sit in a room and brainstorm. I'm like, just throw any idea you have on the wall, we'll come up with something. So those exercises kind of led nowhere. I ended up starting working on this app the first year, which was like a see what your friends are buying, which was interesting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, like, you know,
it's like Instagram shop sort of kind of like with like they're like, oh, if you're like targeted ads with your friends.
Yeah, almost like more so like people were sending links all the time. Like, oh, where'd you get this? Like, where are your earrings from? I'm like, oh, Amazon, like send me the link. Like that was such a process where like go on Amazon, you click whatever. But then as I explored the idea, it kind of became this like TikTok plus Amazon reviews plus like Instagram, like massive like thing where I'm like, this exists all in like disjointed ways. Yeah. I just don't know if I feel strongly enough to like bring it together. For it just wasn't like where my core skill sets were either. So it was fun exploration, but like didn't really end anywhere. And I was getting to the summer where it was time to like get an internship and figure it out. And I really went into school being like, I hope that I come up with an idea and I can work on it all summer. Like I don't have to get an internship. It wasn't the case. And, you know, it was okay. But then I sat back and I was like, well, what do I think is exciting? And I was toying with this like operations agency idea, right? I was like, okay, what do I like? I like being an operator. I liked all those different facets of running a company. And I know that early stage companies need help at a low cost, but like it doesn't have to be full time. Like maybe they just plug someone in at like a small monthly retainer and do that, because that's kind of what I came in as, right? Like, we were making low salaries, but as you know, you needed to, because
you need to you don't need cash, so you're like,
scale the company, but you need the help, right? It's like a what comes first, chicken or the egg thing. So I was like, maybe I can duplicate this on a fractional basis for other companies. So I started exploring, actually ended up getting an internship because I was just applying, you know, that and then I was applying everywhere. I was like, let's just see what happens. And I ended up getting an internship at Little Spoon, which is a baby food company, which was super exciting. And I was doing more of like a strategy and operations role. But it was more high level than I think I had been as an operator, which was exciting because I'm like, look, this company's done really well. They've raised a lot of money. They've really scaled. Let me see what that growth looks like. Because we were still in Series A world, right? And then Series D world looks very different.
For sure.
So it was more just like a learning experience. The team was awesome. Like, they had an office. Like, I got to be like, what does a startup with like money look like? Like, honestly.
Wasn't like if you don't think you're going to run out of cash. Like,
I'm still in touch with those founders. Like, they're awesome, right? Like, learning, getting to just be around smart people was just such a blessing. But I still had this like ops agency type idea. So then I, you know, started like, you know, asking around when the internship ended, and landed my first client, happened to be in food. You know, I was just like CPG agnostic. One of my old founders like posted in some random like WhatsApp group that like he was in and was like, hey, like our ex-chief of staff is like looking to, you know, do some ops consulting. Someone reached out, it was a food client. And I was like, all right, like beauty and food, obviously a little bit different, but the process is somewhat the same, right? Yeah. You're sourcing things, you're booking trucks, you're working on production, like you need the packaging. It's same, but different. And I just started learning and I started to see how that industry, like how the food industry really scales through grocery and retail presence. And it has its own obviously challenges and nuances, but it was so different from D2C world that I was operating in. And the skincare brand is now, you know, they're in Sephora, they're doing great, but I didn't get to see all of that come together. So now being behind the scenes of a scaling brand, I got excited again about like CPG and like that world. I was like, okay, wow, like there is really something here. And then ideas, you know, they pop up as you go. And when you're excited again and you're inspired, you kind of found that spark. I started ideating, right? And I was literally sitting on the couch, I remember, with my fiance. We're sitting on the couch, yeah. After the first year of business school, obviously I'd overindulged a bit on everything. So I was like, I'm back on my health. My health journey in the summer. We're like working out, we're eating healthy, but we were sitting on the couch watching a movie and I was like, I just want a snack. Like I wanted to eat and I love chips. Like chips is just like the thing to me. Like if you're at a bar and they give you like little chips on the side, just consider it like that's mine. Can't touch it, right? So it was like that sort of like craving. And I just didn't want to, like, I didn't want to ruin the work. I was putting in the work of the summer and I was like, there's got to be a better way. So like, all right, what's air? Like, what can you eat that's just like the munch like you want, but like it's not going to like ruin the day of progress that you've had? Because that's really mentally challenging for me, right? Because it's a constant dieter, yo-yo dieting, whatever. Like, everyone's got a little bit of that. And it mentally messes with you when you like, you'll overindulge on something. They're like, all right, like the next day, like, well, I shouldn't even try anymore, right? It's so bad. But I started exploring. I was like, okay, look, there are vegetable chips out there. Let me try some of them. And like, they were good. But then the caloric value, I was like, these are still like 200 calories. And why? It was oil. They were all fried. They were all dipped in oil. So I was like, okay, there are healthier options. Like, they're really not that healthy. And now that I was in the food space, I was a lot more conscious of those things too, right? Like once you're around every brand who's bringing out like the next functional ingredient and like finding the next way to optimize things, like food science is just so cool in its own way. Obviously not a scientist. Like, I don't know any of that, but I was like, around it. So it was just exciting to see how people were innovating. I was like, there's got to be a way. And that was towards the end of the summer. And I went back to school for my second year at business school. And like now I had like the spark, right? The first year was very much like, what am I doing? This app thing, whatever. Like I was like, okay, ops agency, like let me try this. So I kind of was doing both. I was kind of like, let me keep my clients. You know, I was in school, it was good money. And it was also like a good test run of like, can I balance one or two clients, you know, with school, which was like already like maybe three clients. And then I was exploring Veggie Vice on the side, like very lightly. So Wharton actually has a great entrepreneurship program. They're really like putting a lot of resources behind that. One of them being Venture Lab. And within that, they have a food innovation lab specifically.
Very cool.
So yeah, they have like a commercial kitchen that you can go and test in. And I got into the program. They give you like a little money for ingredients, which is exciting. That's cool. Then you get like office hours. So Fridays from like 12 to 3 were like my kitchen hours.
Wow.
I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I did the whole food safety training, and I was like, do I need this? Like, this is intense. It was like how to hold
broccoli.
Right, like how to hold the knife and like how to do this. Wow. Like, the first day I was in there, I was wearing like 4 pairs of gloves because I was like, they said the food safety was really, you know, like, yeah. I didn't know. You have to wear a hat. You have to wear
an apron.
You're
like, I'm going to poison people. I don't know.
Literally. Yeah, so yeah. I was like, whoa, maybe I'm in over my head here. Like, I pulled out the mandolin the first day, and I was like, I'm not a chef.
I
am not a chef. That's the first question I ever asked. Like, oh, are you like a chef? I'm like, no, I just wanted to
eat. You're like, girl, I like lived on takeout for 5 years. I lived in New York City, and I was like a startup operator and maker. Like, I bought groceries once a month.
Literally. Yeah. I just wanted to eat and figure out a way that I could eat without feeling bad. Like, that's really the problem. And so, but you know, again, it feels uncomfortable, just like it did quitting my job, just like it did, you know, being a chief of staff and having autonomy for the first time. But I was like, all right, let's just try. Like, it's awkward, but whatever. I was like recording myself, and like that felt weird, but now I'm so grateful to have those clips, right? Like, you just have to do the things that feel just cringy. Ooh, I don't want to do this. But I sat there 3 hours in the kitchen. I was like, let me test this out. So I started testing a dehydrator, and I was like, okay, we have some early promising versions of like just a little, you know, slice of zucchini or slice of cucumber. Even I was testing dehydrated, like, could this be a chip? Like, could this be something chippy? I'd bring them to class with me. Like, you know, you're around a bunch of people all day in school again, so you can like just have as many taste testers as you want. Got a lot of good feedback. We know that wasn't it. That wasn't the right version, but like you kept iterating from there. And then seeing what would work. It was obviously slow because I was doing just so many things. You know, I was consulting with clients. But then I also got to stay close to the industry, you know, through that. So that kept me inspired of like, how does this all come together? What am I learning from? Like, if this idea can become something, what does scaling that look like? And I was getting to see kind of both things at the same time. And then also managing school, which was fun. But like, I definitely didn't let myself not indulge in that experience because I'm like, this is finite, right? Like, this is ending in May. Yeah. This could be my next, you know, 10, 15, whatever years. So it was a lot to manage. But like those little baby steps where you're like, okay, it's Friday, I'm going to the kitchen. You know, like those little things like keep you going. And then I pivoted to freeze drying. So like that was, you know, the next thing, but I wouldn't have even known to do that if I hadn't started with the, you know, you start somewhere, you learn, and then you go, and then you keep going. It really is the baby steps. And then, yeah, in May, I was like, it's graduation. What am I doing next? I had 2 clients at the time on the consulting front. I had gotten this to like a somewhat final form, right? Like with freeze drying and the flavorings and such, where I felt comfortable being like, we've got something. I don't know what it is, but like, we've got something. And then again, I was like, okay, I'm going to give myself 6 months now, right? Like blinders on. I kept my consulting clients because I was like, I need to do something to, you know, keep the cash flow going.
For sure.
And gave myself 6 months to be like, how can I scale this, right? Because making it yourself is just not feasible. Freeze dryers are super expensive. I tried to buy one on Craigslist, got scammed. Like, not, we can go into that story, but like that was not recommended. So like, I wasn't going to be making this myself, and I couldn't find commercial kitchens that had like the capacity you'd need, because it's like a technology at the end of the day, right? You're buying this machine, you have to freeze dry, but like the capacity you need, like there's a pound of wet broccoli that goes into each bag. Like, where am I going to find the amount of freeze dryers?
That's a really surprising amount. That's really, that's a lot.
Because it's so light. It's all water. It's all water, right? So like, you're really just sucking that all out of there. So I was like, okay, if I can get this to scale at a price that makes sense, because now I'm in the food space, margins everything. Like, I'm not just launching a business to launch a business. Like, that's stupid, right? Because a lot of founders, which I get it, the passion really drives you, but you'll launch something because you're excited about it, and that's a beautiful thing. But then you'll hit a point where you're like, now climbing an uphill battle to not only scale the business, but scale it on like a product that's losing money per unit. I was like, you can't do that. There's already gonna be battles you fight. Like, I'm not saying my margin's perfect, but like, there's already uphill battles you'll face at scale. Don't let your own margin be one of them, because that'll continue to evolve with, like, you'll have a better path to evolve that with scale.
Rather training right there.
Right.
Honestly,
right? Like, why are you starting from negative?
Yeah, exactly.
So I was like, I'm not gonna do this.
Be a little practical.
Yeah.
Right?
I was like, I'm not gonna do this if it doesn't make sense. And then literally, I think in June or July, I was just calling up manufacturers. I was like, I gotta find someone. And then, you know, finally found someone who had operations. I was looking all over because freeze drying in the US was pretty expensive. So I was, you know, Mexico, Peru, Colombia, like overseas in India, Asia, where can I find? Because, you know, this technology has been around for years. Started using in the army to like preserve organs. Yep.
Oh. What?
And literally like
super
preserving
weird.
Blood and organs. I actually asked it important. I had some MD, MBA friends, and I asked some of my MD friends, and I was like, do you guys have freeze dryers in the lab? And they're like, yeah, but for like body parts. Yeah, yeah. Like, and I was like,
I don't think my food safety training would like that.
I was like, can we clean it? And my friend's like, no, like we're not putting your vegetable chips.
Oh my god.
I was like, but I tried. You had to try.
You had to try.
Like we're
fear.
I was on a campus, right? I was like, there's gotta be resources.
Yeah.
So anyway, all to say, ended up working. So it's just, again, one step in front of the other. I was so defeated, right? Like you're calling all these people and they're sending you to random people here and there, and it was just like the pricing wasn't making sense for me. And then it clicked. I had a few rounds of R&D, and then I just kept going from there, and then brought it to life. We did the packaging, got the product to a place that I was happy with her now. I think you're always going to be a perfectionist. You kind of have to decide at one point that you're like, okay, it can continue to evolve. Even to the last minute, I was like, maybe we try like this thickness or this, and the team was like, we got to make this, if you're not going to get it on time if we don't. So I think that's ever evolving. But I got it to the point where I'm like, I feel confident about putting this in the market, and then I want to see what happens, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just launched this week into my friend's restaurant, which was exciting. I didn't text a single friend. I posted on Instagram twice, and I was like, come if you want, because I really wanted to see like what the market thinks. Like, having your friends come and buy everything is exciting and great, but it's not what the norm is going to look like, right? So I wanted that support, and I was like, I know I'm supported, but I don't need in that way. I want strangers. I want to hear what people think that I don't know, because that's the only way I'm going to get better. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now. It's in the market at Rooted only for now, in Madison Square Park. And then we'll be launching in a much bigger way this April.
This is so exciting.
Sorry, I feel like I just talked for so long.
No, there's so much to unpack too. And I have a lot of questions, but I think too, it really seems like you're so high energy. You're so extroverted.
Thanks.
You have such a great presence. And clearly, I feel like you're very motivated by relationships, and like that was kind of a motivation for you to go to grad school, et cetera. How did that lead you to becoming a solo founder? Because it really doesn't seem like that fits with kind of your personality, and it's a huge challenge. Would love to hear about that.
No, wow. I'm glad. Crazy that you picked up on that. I am sitting in my apartment all day alone, like just like grinding out. But honestly, I meet with a lot of founders, and I really feel like those are my coworkers, right? Like grabbing a coffee with another founder and getting to share little tips, and like, those people are my inspiration. They're my co-founders. They're the ones who like keep me going, because like they'll have an insight that maybe I don't have, and I'll have an insight that they don't have. And like, we might not be in the same industry, like exact industry, like, but we're in food and we have different scale, but you are sharing tips, right? So I really think those people keep me going. And I know I'll have a team one day, right? Like, you have to believe. Yeah. Right now, I really wish I came out of business school with a co-founder too, but I didn't really find anyone who kind of had that like risk on tolerance that I did, because I honestly have that from the experiences I already have, right? A lot of people come into school straight from their corporate jobs, and I feel very lucky that I was able to take that risk beforehand to be like, I'm good with that, right? Like, now I've done it, knock on wood, worked out. Like, I'm not scared anymore of that part of things. And I think a lot of people are still getting over that hump.
Yeah.
So I couldn't really find anyone that matched my energy of like, we're going for this, like somehow, some way. Maybe that person will come, right? Or they don't. And I hire an amazing team, and I hire amazing experts that are good at sales, are good at branding, are good at whatever that may be. But right now, we're at the scale I'm at, where I'm like, I did the packaging, like I can manage that. I can manage the operations, the marketing. I'm just kind of winging it on TikTok, right? Like, it is just still me, and I'm okay with that, because I want it to be me. I want them to get to know the face behind the brand and who I am, and like how we're building this. Like, I'm not some big company with like a bunch of resources. Like, it's just me. I'm in my apartment, I'm sitting on my desk, like just with a laptop, like that's what's happening. So I think those people will come, but the extrovertedness, weirdly, I think school made me less of an extrovert, if that
really?
You can believe. Yeah, I think it's like an exhaustive extroverted experience, where now I'm like, wow, I don't need this all the time. Like, I like being alone. So I think during the day, it's really like my grind time. And then evenings and, mornings or coffees or whatever, like I'll go out, network with founders. Like yesterday, my Fridays was just meetings back to back to back with people. And like, I love that, kind of get my quota of socialness. And then I'm like back in my hole, grinding away. And like, that's the balance I have right now. And it'll evolve, right? I think every period of life you go in, it's fleeting, right? It's only gonna look like this for so long.
It's true.
And then when you're past it, you're like, oh, that was so nice. Right? Like, when I was trying to get this off the ground, some of my days, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I'm not doing anything. I had my consulting stuff, I'd knock that out, and I'd be like, I don't know what, like, there was nothing to do yet. And I was like, twiddling my, I was like, what am I doing? And now I'm like, oh, I miss
so much to do.
I'm like, there's so much to do. So, like, even friends who are like frustrated and they're like, oh, I haven't hit this yet. I'm like, once it happens, it'll never be this way again. So like, enjoy it, right? Because it all happens when it should. But
you had the business school experience. I'm sure there was so many social things.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you had a really good, I guess, food experience at a place, very pre-professional, like, warden.
Yeah.
Like, we went there for undergrad. Like,
yeah.
Traditionally, B school is
You guys are way smarter, but undergrads, they're crazy.
No, but B school is also, I mean, that is a crazy place because there's so much freaking pressure to, like, conform. And I think also the type of person that goes there is not a risk taker.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, they're very, like, type A hardos that are like, I'm going to do step A, B, and C. I was valedictorian. Like, you know, I was valedictorian. Yeah. Now I am this.
You
now
do
I'm this.
IB. Like, you do PE. You go back.
You know, Or you're nothing.
Maybe
like,
HBS,
exactly. And then, you know, whatever. And then you buy your Hamptons house and you live out.
You live in New York and like, have two perfect children.
And they all go to Trinity. And it's like kind of crazy. And it like actually, and it's so much pressure socially as well.
Yeah.
I think B school had more of that probably.
Yeah. So I, but I feel like traditionally it's always like very finance oriented, maybe consulting at a place like Wharton. How did you kind of find your community of people that were interested in food specifically? And were there a lot of those people, or was it more of like an entrepreneurial type of environment that you were able to kind of meet people and you know, share lessons and network?
Yeah, definitely not the latter. It was definitely very finance consulting focused. And then going in, I didn't realize that, right? I really thought like, oh, business school, like because the founders I worked with went to business, like people are like that. And then you get there and you're like, wow, we are few and far between, right? Like there is
not the norm.
Not the norm. And I actually went into school being like, oh, I'm kind of type A because I did banking. And then I get there and I'm like, ooh.
It's a different level.
I am type B. Like even the trip plannings, like the meticulous spreadsheets of people who would plan these trips. I'm like, God bless you. Couldn't be me. Right? But like, again, you learn so much about yourself like when you see the next level of things. And undergrads, they're scarier. Because in an entrepreneurship program, you're all together. So like every pitch comp, it'd be like my veggie chips versus the next AI soil technology solving the world. And I was like, he should. This
actually, respectfully, you should.
This 18-year-old, I'm like, I'm changing the world another way, but like,
whoa,
it's all him. Like the undergrads are insane. So like, I can't even imagine what you guys went through. But yeah, I think getting to school, you didn't really find a lot of those people. You really had to seek them out. So like if there was like the first class I took actually was called innovation. And like you literally every day you were pitching in class. If it was your own idea and then like you would eliminate, right? So my idea, it was called the One App, which was like one application for every building in like New York City or like any metro area. Because you're applying, when you're looking for apartments, you're looking for, you have to fill out different paperwork for every single place, but it's all kind of the same, but it's still annoying. And you have to show up with your packet of papers, you don't get your apartment. I was like, let's just do the Common App for colleges with the things. Again, didn't go anywhere, but you know, I'm always ideating and I pitched that and then like other people whose ideas got eliminated, like you'd vote and then they join your team. And then by the end you have like a team of, you know, people working on an idea. And like, it just got me comfortable getting up in front of people, chatting, finding like-minded people who are excited to like innovate and create something. And then I'd grab them and be like, let's sit in a GSR. Let's kick some undergrads out of the GSR and let's sit there and like use the whiteboard and like put every idea you've ever had on the board because I'm like, I need to brain dump. Like I have a massive list on my phone of like ideas. It's just anything in your daily life, right? That's a problem. You're like, how can I solve this? Not everything is also your problem, but like, you know, it's good to figure out like what you can tackle and what you can't. So that's how I started to find those people. The entrepreneurship program was great for that. And then the food side really like came from the clubs, right? There's a food ad club and like I'd go to a couple events and like some people were on the investing side, some people were on the healthcare side of things, some people were actually on the CPG side. So that was exciting too, to see how those different worlds, like we'd come together with like a common, you know, interest and passion and then bring certain founders in. So like, I really enjoyed those events. Mm-hmm. So it's really just seeking it out, right? Like you're never going to be handed on. If you were looking for finance people, hand it on a platter. Yeah. If you're looking for consulting people, hand it on a platter. But like the entrepreneurship people, I hope it's like Stanford one, right? Like I hope it's just, you know, you swing a whatever, what is the expression? You swing a dead cat, like you get 10 tech bros, like whatever.
Oh my gosh,
that's what Wharton is for like finance and consulting. But I think it's changing. And I think people are, you know, more excited to, you know, explore these paths and earlier on in their careers. So I think it'll change. But yeah, it was really, you know, a self-driven effort to find those people.
Yeah, I love
that. That's great. I feel like we've, you know, met so many people in the consumer entrepreneurship space that came from this type of background and now are starting something in food, wellness, and health. So it's really nice to see a place like Wharton like have so many resources dedicated to founders like yourself.
Yeah. We're like Wharton poster children. We're like,
hey.
Put us on a flyer.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's talk about the product.
Yeah, let's talk about veggie.
So it's broccoli and zucchini now.
Yes.
How did you choose those veggies?
Yeah. So zucchini was actually the first vegetable I thought of, because it kind of, like, when I thought chip, I kind of thought, you know, cucumber, zucchini. Yeah. The cucumbers really weren't holding their shape, or, you know, weren't getting there. But zucchini, I'm like, same, same, but different. They're like cousins, you know, like very light. I wanted a light area that's really back to, like, the problem or, like, the inception of it, where I was like, just want something light to put in my mouth and crunch on, but, like, not, you know, ton of calories and feel bad about myself after. Honestly, zucchini, love her, problem child. Like, she is, there's so much water, and, like, the amount of iterations it took me to, like, get this to even the point it's at now, crazy. Like, my friends who have tried every soggy version, like, now are like, where we started, right? Like, in class, I'd be like, try this, and they're like, this is, like, foamy, this is soggy, whatever. But yeah, I think if I had to do it again, maybe wouldn't start with zucchini. But knowing that now, like, you know, you pick vegetables.
The hardest vegetables.
More consciously. Yeah, I kind of got to the hardest point. It only gets easier. Broccoli, two rounds of already. I'm like, great. Love. Like, broccoli works just because of the way it's, you know, the composition of it. So zucchini was first, kind of all through school and even through the summer was doing zucchini. And then when I started working with this manufacturer, I was testing other vegetables. So I tested broccoli, I tested cauliflower, I tested some other things. And I was like, okay, these two feel like, you know, the most intuitive vegetables to start with from, like, a consumer standpoint, right? People understand. Actually, broccoli has been the most, like, broccoli, like, people are excited because it's such a, you know, when you think vegetable, you kind of think broccoli. Zucchini has been a little bit more like, oh, I wouldn't think of, you know, like, not like a usual thought when you think of vegetables. Maybe it's more bespoke. Again, I'm learning. But broccoli really came from, like, the testing that I was doing with my co-man to test different vegetables. Again, because I was testing for scale from the get-go, right? I'm like, I can make this in a commercial kitchen, but I know that's not where this journey ends. So, like, I want to start where I know I want to be to make sure I can scale it from the get-go. And luckily was able to do that at a smaller budget, because I think that's really where founders face the issue, is when you're, you know, looking for that next big partner. They require high MOQs. They require a lot of upfront. And I was able to find a partner who could work with me at a smaller scale at that time to start that from the get-go. So I know I can scale with them. But yeah, broccoli came from there. And then the flavorings, I mean, I know I wanted sour cream and onion. That's, like, what I was testing at school, which everyone was like, that's such an odd flavor to start with too. But, like, that's my favorite.
Hey, like, I love sour cream and onion. Like, I feel like it's very classic chip. It's very classic chip.
People are like, what's the science? Like, who did you interview? Like, how many consumer surveys did you do? And I was like,
I like it.
I like it. Like, I want sour.
I'm the consumer.
You're like, my goal is to make a snack for me. Okay.
Literally. So, literally. I mean, and I felt stupid being like, I picked it. Like, I just, you know.
I see the passion.
And exactly. I was like, I want it. So, like, I will not put something out, like, I don't like or want, because I'm like, I am the consumer first. And I know people say, like, you don't, like, you know, you shouldn't build for yourself, which I get, but, like, I was solving a problem for myself. So I really started with sour cream because I was like, I want the bold flavors of this, because I think a salted chip you can find in a lot of ways, but what's really going to capture people is the fact that it's chip-like but also has the flavors that you love. Totally. And really, what are we eating? We're eating for the flavor, right? Like, the crunch and the texture is one thing, but, like, you want a vessel for the barbecue, the salt and vinegar, the, you know, whatever that flavor is. So I wanted to go out there with a flavor. So I was actually doing zucchini sour cream for a long time. And when I had broccoli in the mix, I was like, let's do broccoli sour cream, because it just tasted better, like, together even. And then let's do zucchini sea salt. So you get that, like, one baseline chip. Like, you know, like, if you're thinking chip and, like, you need to compare it against something, you have a sea salt, like, base version. But immediately people are like, I need flavor on this. I'm like, I know, it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how I started with the two.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And you launch with, I guess, friends and family, and then it's enrooted.
Yes.
What's next for Veggie Vice? Are you going to sell on e-commerce or any other type of retailers?
So I've been figuring that out. I was actually going to go all retail first. So I have an exciting retail opportunity that's coming up.
Amazing.
Yeah. Hopefully by the time this airs, it'll be live, so we can talk about it. But so that kind of, you know, well, to speak high level, but it came out out of the blue. I kind of applied for this random pitch comp through, like, a random Google form. Really, these things are just very random. And flew out, pitched to this retailer. They loved it. And, like, I was going to sort of launch, you know, right into that store. And then I started posting on TikTok to start to get, you know, gain momentum and get an audience and be like, okay, once this launches in retail, the game is, like, velocity. You need to clear the shelves out quickly. So I want an army behind me to do that. And then after seeing the reception online, I have a couple of viral videos, just a few. It was so exciting, right? Like, people are just so excited about the concept. Like, no one's tasted it on the internet. No one who's posting or whatever commenting has tasted it. So they're just excited about the concept of it, where I'm like, okay, there's an online presence mm-hmm. here too, and I don't want to deprive them of the chips. So I think I'll do a hybrid of like retail and e-com. I also want to test some B2B. I think offices or like venue, like there's so much, like airplanes, like there's so much you can do here. I want to test them, you know, and see what really hits and where my consumer is. I think a lot of people are like, you know, what's your consumer? Define it now. I'm like, I don't know yet, right? Like I really want to learn. And I think if you go into it, be like knowing exactly who your consumer is, exactly where they're going to buy, you're going to set yourself up to fail. Like, I think you learn so much just being in markets. So that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm like, the babies, they're in the world. My art is out there. Let's see who loves it. Let's see what market likes it the most. Let's see what channel, you know, it's thriving on. And then we'll double down there and then keep exploring other ones, right? I think with something that is really built for everyone, like everyone eats vegetables, right? So it's not like this is hindering any certain market. It's just trying to figure out like who's the best, you know, consumer to target first, and then the second, you know, and then you just keep going from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love that. And I feel like also too, obviously you've hit a lot of roadblocks. There's been a lot of things. I feel like now you're finally at a point where it probably feels like you're really launching.
Yeah.
How do you think you've really fought through like kind of just these moments of difficulty throughout this process? And like, what do you think you kind of continually kind of remind yourself of?
Yeah. Oh, that's hard. Cause I think there's no like one thing. I think every problem in its own is so like, okay, how do we, like, can't find the right co-pack, right? Like, keep going, keep calling. I think it's just, like, faith. Like, you kind of have to be, you have to believe in your own vision before anyone else can see it, right? Like, I see where this is going. Like, I can see the aisles of grocery stores that we have, like, fried potatoes all over right now, just all vegetables. Like, why not, right? So seeing that as, like, the 10-year, 20-year, whatever vision, I know, I was like, we can make this happen. Like, you just have to believe, and then that gives you the force to keep going, because no, like, there's nothing else, right? You have nothing. Nothing's happened yet. All you have is the thoughts in your mind to be like, I want to make this a reality, and you just have to keep putting one foot in front of the other to figure that out. So there's no, like, one real, like, this is the thing that'll solve all your problems. This is the thing. It's just the faith in yourself and the faith in the vision of, like, I know this can happen. I just need to figure out how. And I'm like, there's freeze-dried fruits. I'm like, we can do this, right? Like, ChatGPT is doing my homework, but I can't figure out how to do this. Like, come on. So, like, every time I hit one of those, like, lulls, I'm like, oh, gotta keep going. That. And that's, like, maybe back to that banker mentality, yeah. right? Where you're like, huh, I gotta keep
grind
going.
Grind it out. Can't sleep. No, you just gotta
We're
figure it out.
Deal Once tomorrow. More Celsius. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter.
We gotta keep going. And honestly, this is, like, maybe also an inception from the banking life, right? Where you're snacking late at your desk. Yeah. Like, we had a big drawer of snacks and, like, would just, you know, nosh there. So I think, like, that also, I was like, that I want to sell into banks. I don't know how I could do that.
Totally.
Let them eat.
Snack on.
Let them eat.
The bros would love.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. The bros and the finance girlies.
They need to. Yeah. Cause they're not working out. You got to keep it tight. Yeah, no. So that I think is, like, how I kept myself going in those moments. But I would really say every problem is unique. And I don't think I think when, because everything is going to break and everything, like, after being in startups, like, that's just how these things go. Yeah. The industries are so broken and disjointed. Operations is so, so broken. I'm like so unfazed now where I'm like, oh, this thing got stuck. Oh, this thing broke. Oh, the truck, like, fully damaged okay. Like, you just cannot react because it's just what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's the nature of just the business. Oh, this is going to cost an extra $2,000. Okay. Like, because obviously figure out why and understand, like, is that really what's happening? But it's just, that's the nature of product businesses. Like, there's inventory, there's capital, there's, like, physical, tangible things that need to get from point A to point B. And every step in between is a point of failure. So the more steps you add, the more points it's going to fail. And you're like, okay, you cannot be surprised, right? So you have to prepare for those moments as best you can. But when they happen, you fight through. You know,
mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah.
Love that.
And I feel like this is, like, a good sort of wrap up. I mean, well, we always end with this, all of our interviews, but we obviously have a very young audience. What would you tell kind of our young female audience if they're, like, thinking about leaving their job, start a company? What would you tell them today to inspire them?
Yeah. I thought about this a lot when you asked me the first time. I was like, I don't know. There's so much, right? I think on leaving the job front, it feels so permanent.
Yeah.
Like, it really, and I don't think it's talked about enough that, like, it's so scary. And people think it's the end of the world. And people are like, oh, you're being dramatic, this, that. No, but, like, that's your livelihood, right? You've worked your whole life to get to college. And then all through college, you work to get a job. And then you get that first job. And, like, maybe you don't love it, but you feel so, because you've sunken so much of your life into it, that, like, how can I possibly leave? And then I think when you have that moment anything that scares you, like, you really have to run towards it. It's, there's this quote, I don't know who said it, but it's like, the cave you fear holds the treasure you seek. And I kept that on my desktop all through business school, because I'm like, the whole thing felt so uncomfortable, right? Every classmate is getting a consulting job. Every classmate's getting like a big Fortune 500 role somewhere, making, you know, too much money. And I felt stupid being like, I'm making vegetable chips. it felt stupid. And everything's going to feel stupid until it's not, right? Yeah. So I think back to my early advice for the youngins, like, it's nothing, nothing's so permanent. Like, mm-hmm. the day I quit my job at Citi, like, the MDs laughed me out of the door, right? They were, and not to their dismay, like, they don't know anything else, yeah. right? And it's, at the time, I was like, fuck you. But now I'm like, this is all you've done your whole life. Yeah. Like, how could you possibly see what I'm seeing for my life? So I thank them now. I'm like, wow, like, thank you for having that resistance. Because if you had, if you had been nice about it, maybe I'd been like, oh, I should stay. They're nice people. And the day I was quitting, you know what they said? Okay, if it doesn't work out, like, you can come back. It's not that serious and it's not that permanent. So I think my overall advice would be like, you don't know what you don't know. And the only way you're going to find out is by trying it out. And if you don't love it, great. One last thing that you have to think about all day to be like, oh, I really want to try this. I really want to try fashion. I really want to try entrepreneurship. I really want to try beauty. Go try it, right? And I think college is a really great time for that. So like the consulting I was doing on the side, when you're in college or you're just out of college, like, you can pick up internships. Like, you can pick up small things. Obviously, check your employment agreements. Like, don't do something illegal. But like, you know, but yeah. like, you can
There's
work
so much time
on the weekend, especially in college. Oh my God. I wish I did more of that exploration. Right now, mm-hmm. if I talk to someone going to college, I'm like, don't listen to the career center. Like, don't be one track minded. Like, go to the fashion club meeting, go to the cooking club meeting, because life, like, you have to sample everything. You'll never know unless you try it. And like, I never knew what this could be if I didn't step into that kitchen scared, like, using a mandolin. I'm like, what am I doing? And putting in the dehydrator, right? Like, if I didn't just put one foot in front of the other, you would have no idea. So I think you don't know what you don't know, and it's not that serious. Yeah. Like, you'll figure it out. That's it.
Well, before we end, we should do a live taste test.
Oh my gosh.
We have the zucchini here and the broccoli there.
So good.
I'm so excited to try.
Okay, let's do that first. I love the marketing too. I love it. I think, like,
it's like, make veggies your vice, really, you know?
Yeah, it's also very, like, chic.
Thanks. Very chic. Like, it's very just minimalist, but
I love it.
It feels like, kind of like, the broccoli's kind of like the hot girl over here. Like, it's kind of hot with the
and this is like a little devil.
I love it. Thanks, guys.
Oh, it's just really good.
Okay, I'm gonna try this zucchini chip.
It's really addicting.
Okay, let's try it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Crunch.
Oh my god.
Nice.
90 calories per bag.
Oh my gosh. This is so good.
Thanks.
It's literally just salt?
Just zucchini and salt, yeah.
There's a lot of iron, potassium, vitamin A.
No seed oils.
So it's literally just the vegetables. So the process actually preserves about 95% of the nutrition of a raw vegetable. So you're not losing the nutrients. Yeah, did a little swap. You're not losing all of the nutrition that you might get with, like, frying a vegetable.
Yeah, I love, like, healthy new snacky companies.
Yeah.
And I haven't, like, I've tried other chips, but it's very oily and, like, very, like, just doughy.
These are great.
Thank you.
Very light.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do a crunch test.
Ooh, I love this sour cream and onion.
Thanks.
It's so good.
Like, you should get these on flights.
Yes. Yeah. That's really, like, another, like, I'm really trying to orient around, like, the moments, right? Like, after a sweaty workout class, you maybe aren't reaching for this.
Right?
But, like, when you're locked on a plane, you just want a snack. You just want a munch.
Right?
Excuse me. And, like, that is the perfect use case.
It always feels so gross on planes, too.
Exactly. I don't know why. What is it about planes? It's so gross, too.
Disgusting.
Anything I put in my stomach, I'm like, ugh.
Literally.
So, yeah, that's hopefully one day.
Well, I will buy these up. These are great.
I will literally pay whatever
amount of money. These are fire. I'm addicted now. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I'm excited.
Thank you so much for
our listeners.
Yeah, where can we find you?
Yes. So we're on Instagram. We're on TikTok. Instagram is Eat Veggie Vice, and TikTok is my personal. I won't spell my name out, but Redeema Kapoor, you can look me up. But yeah, that's kind of how I'm building an audience right now and trying to keep people going along the journey. But yeah, find me there. Feel free to DM me. You know, it's just me. So if I didn't answer, I'm sorry, because, you know, people are DMing and they're like, you're not getting back to me. I'm like, I'm sorry. Yeah, like, I'm
just
trying.
Myself and I.
Yeah, you need to achieve a set.
I know. out one day.
One day.
One day. But yeah, I'm excited to connect with people and can't hear what people think. Can't wait to hear what people think. So feel free to send all thoughts, good and bad. That's the only way we get better.
It's amazing. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for Medima. Thank you for coming on. It was amazing. And obviously, always reach out to us, womansplain1@gmail.com and womansplain Instagram, TikTok, etc. And also eat your veggies, veggie vice.
Thanks so much for listening, guys.
Veggies your vice.
Yay. Thanks, guys. Bye.